The Tom Woods Show, episode 2191.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, we all know it is time for us to break up, but everybody's status quo bias is standing in the way of this obvious and humane solution. Check out my brand new ebook called National Divorce, The Peaceful Solution to Irreconcilable Differences, which you can get for free at nationaldivorce.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. So glad to be joined today by our old friend Gene Epstein. You know him as the director of the Soho Forum, the premier debate series, not just libertarian debate series, but the premier debate series in the United States, if not the world, covering all sorts of topics of interest to libertarians and of all people who care about the fate of mankind. Gene is formerly economics and book review editor at Barron's. He has quite a career. If I were to list for you all the things he's done during that career, it would take the entire episode. And the thing is, since Gene's opening remarks generally take the entire episode, I don't dare do that. So, Gene, welcome to the show.
I'm going to try to make my opening remarks brief, Tom. But, you know, of course, look, I have a special relationship with the Tom Woods Show, and I like to feel a special relationship with you. So I take the prerogative to make a few initial announcements. And Tom, I owe you a huge thank you for all that you've done to promote the Soho Forum. You've been faithfully promoting for no fee whatsoever, I should add, because you do occasionally take fees for promoting something, faithfully promoting all our Soho Forum events as they come up. I did have testimony from a lovely woman named Gwendolyn. I never got her last name, from San Francisco. She said she happened to be in town, and because she heard that the Soho Forum was going to have an event coinciding with her being in New York City from San Francisco, she came to my Soho Forum. I had a wonderful conversation with her, and I just want to reach out to her. I was sorry I didn't get her contact information. And Gwendolyn, you said you were looking for a job in San Francisco. Look, if it's going to be in San Francisco, why not look for a job in New York City? Because you are a fantastic person, and you know who you are. Tweet me at Gene Soho Forum to tell me how you're doing, at Gene Soho Forum. Gwendolyn faithfully listens to the show, Tom, so I'm sure she's going to get this message. But after thanking you, I also want to tender an apology to you, Tom. Some small thing has been on my conscience, and I'd like to express it. I sent you a birthday greetings on your Nifty 50.
Yes, you did.
Your semi-centennial.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, and I talked about the difficulty you're going to have in your next 50, trying to match your first 50. What you've achieved in your first 50 is more than most of us could hope to achieve in 100 years, having been named and been given the Lifetime Achievement Award in Vienna for your contribution to Austrian economics just alone. But I listed a lot of things. I didn't mention your many books. And I thought, how ridiculous for me not to mention your many books, Tom, among your achievements. And so I want to make up for that. I mean, you're just, on all fronts, you've done so much. And that segues into the next part of it, which is that I think you plan to do something that I envy you for, that I'd like to do a little more of, which is that trying to do something in the world. You know, you're great at being a member of the chattering classes, promoting ideas. You have huge achievements there now. You want to focus on actually doing things in the world. I applaud that. And I'm especially happy that you had Vivek Ramaswamy on. And I want to recommend to people, if you haven't listened to Tom's episode with Vivek Ramaswamy, which was a couple of weeks ago, you should interrupt right now and go to that episode, listen to that, and then come back to this one. Because he's created Strive Asset Management to counteract the massive amount of money that's promoting bad things in the stock market, in the corporate world. I myself plan to transfer my substantial assets to Vivek's services. The first one is Drill, and that has to do with investing in oil companies mainly. And I think that's wonderful. So I commend you on doing that, Tom, and on all your efforts with respect to what you've been doing aside from that, which I guess segues into our discussion about the student loan program, because you released a very incisive email about the student forgiveness decision made by the White House recently. We should discuss that. Although before we get to that, let me just announce, Tom, that our next debate at the SOA Forum is going to be September 19th, and it's going to be a debate on abolishing nuclear weapons with Ward Wilson, who wrote a book a number of years ago called Five Myths About Nuclear Weapons, which I think is a great book. It's got a fantastic chapter on the myth that Japan surrendered because of nuclear weapons, by the way. Also a great chapter on how close the world came to nuclear war during the Cuban Missile Crisis. He's going to advocate for the push to abolish nuclear weapons. Of course, he will have a counter. In October, I myself am going to be debating Binyamin Applebaum, a very nice guy who also happens to write about economics for the editorials of the New York Times. So that will be good to get a New York Times writer in the arena with me. That will be in October. And I just want to announce that. And also, on September 19th will actually be the perfect six-year anniversary of the SOA Forum. I looked it up, and in September 19th, 2016, is when we had our first debate. So it's exactly 6 years to the day, and it will hopefully kick off a successful fundraising drive on our part, because we do want to do many more things. We want to go down to Florida again and maybe induce Tom Woods to do a debate. Tom, as you know, I've been calling you occasionally the Bobby Fischer of debating, because and in case the younger people don't know, Bobby Fischer became world champion in chess, and then he never really played another championship game again. So you beat Michael Malice, and you basically never debated again, because I have to put two asterisks in front of your supposed loss to Bob Murphy on the Contra Cruise, because I was there, Tom. And you know, it was a Contra Cruise culture. It was an informative, fun debate. But you know, we were all a little, you know, drunk on wine and pancakes. And toward the end of the debate, you started to recommend that people vote for Bob's side of the argument. So I don't really count that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So really, you're undefeated, Tom, as far as I'm concerned. And so you're acting like Bobby Fischer. You won't come back into the ring. As a matter of fact, I have a debate already potentially lined up with respect to divorce, as you like to put it. So I can't get you to do that one, and you might want to turn that one down as well. But anyway, back to my fundraising. I just want to say, if you go into thesoaforum.org and hit the donate button, we'd be very grateful to you. You can be a bronze member, or you can be a Bitcoin member or a gold member. I forget our little categories. And one of those memberships entitles you to have dinner with Gene Epstein. Last year when we did that, we had only one taker. A number of people had donations, but only one taker invited me to lunch. You know, so that's the old joke, you know, first prize, one dinner with Gene Epstein, second prize, two dinners with Gene Epstein. But we did have one person do it. So we give out all kinds of goodies and swag. So please go to the donate button on thesoaforum.org. Well, thanks for allowing me to make these announcements, Tom. Anything you want to add to my announcements before we get to the main subject, which is the student forgiveness?
Well, just to tell everybody, see what I told you? I told you. Yeah. that's what would happen. Yeah, a couple of things. The Ramaswamy interview is episode 2186, so it's very easy for people to scroll back and find it. Second thing, I mentioned yesterday in my interview with Doc Dixon. Now, as we're recording this, Gene, that hasn't come out yet.
So don't
reproach yourself. Oh my gosh, how did I miss the? It hasn't come out yet. But my interview with the magician Doc Dixon, I mentioned, because he also was in this little roast, because basically what happened was I was turning 50.
Oh yeah.
My wife put out a request to a number of my good friends. Yeah. Do you want to record a little something for Tom on the occasion of his 50th in the spirit of a roast? Now yours was in the spirit of generosity. And more of a toast, right?
Yeah,
so if you didn't mention my books, if that's the least of your offenses, then no problem given the roast of it. But then it was put together by the guy who does the Mises Caucus video work. He's so great. And he made it into just such a spectacular, amazing visual presentation. Just for me, I haven't released it to the public, and I might not. But it was a great, great birthday surprise. And then you mentioned the debate that I did on pacifism with Bob Murphy on the Contra Cruise back in 2020.
Yeah.
And yeah, I do remember at the end, I was saying, look, I know a lot of you, I was roasting Bob. I was saying, a lot of you may say, why should Woods win all the debates? You know, maybe we should vote for Bob as a way of thanking him for his contributions to the Liberty Movement, or whatever.
Yeah, this would be like Bobby Fischer, you know, throwing the chess game because he's playing with a nice young man who's so sweet.
And
of course, Bob had the moral high ground because he was arguing for pacifism. activism and so on. Yeah, so you threw that one. So that's why I don't count it. So that's why you're undefeated, because you took on and vanquished the great Michael Malice.
Yes, that's right. That's right. All right, so let's jump into our topic finally.
Okay,
and,
sure,
and if we have people who are just really impatient that we had this wonderful, fun banter.
You can skip it.
Yeah, you can always skip it. But I mean, it's just, you know, you've said about the Tom Woods Show that it improves your mood.
Yeah,
I feel like the Gene Epstein banter at the beginning of the episode improves my mood.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, no, indeed. And I had to admit, and happily Tom didn't take it as an insult, that even though I looked forward to the content of the Tom Woods Show, I was wondering, why do my fingers always do the walking to the Tom Woods Show on my phone? And it really is that there's a certain improvement of mood, a certain charm to the show that's very hard to define. It's Tom's sort of natural enthusiasm that comes through. It's not forced. It's natural. And he sort of like lifts my mood. And I imagine he does that for so many others.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about the student loan thing. I have to say, given the hesitation on this, I thought Biden was just not going to do it.
Oh, yeah.
So it was a little bit of a surprise. Not quite as much of a surprise as the Dobbs decision.
Yeah.
But very few things are as surprising as that. So, I do want to discuss it. Apparently, do you recall the details? It's like $10,000. But first of all, it depends on your income. You have to earn less than $125,000 a year, $250,000 if you're married, to qualify for the relief. And the relief is, what I saw was in the amount of $10,000, $20,000 if you had gotten a Pell Grant, which is almost nobody.
Yeah.
A very, very small number of people.
Yeah.
So I've seen two ways of thinking about this in the libertarian world. Overwhelmingly, so far, it's been, well, this just isn't right. Why should you pass off your obligations to other people? I mean, unless you're an idiot, you knew what you were agreeing to. But then on the other hand, we have some people saying, but the cultural expectation that you would go to college was so overpowering and came from so many sources of authority, including your own family, that it could be said that maybe you weren't fully grasping the import of what you were doing, because it seemed as if you genuinely had no other choice. So maybe we should go a little easy on people. Do you actually come down on one or the other of these?
I should say for listeners that if you don't already subscribe to Tom's email column, as I'll call it, then you certainly should. My two favorite emails are actually from Don Boudreau, his missives, and Tom's missives. You went over a number of good points in your email already about it. But getting then to your question, to argue that you've got to forgive student loans because young people are pressured to go to college, I mean, it just sort of reminds me of the idea that we can force people to wear seatbelts, even though they're only protecting themselves. And actually, people who actually wear seatbelts have been known to drive someone more dangerously than others, so they're more of a threat. And why can we force people to take precautions for themselves that have nothing to do with others, like force them to wear helmets? Because if they go into the medical care system, other people are going to have to pay for it. And it was actually because, I mean, way back when, Milton Friedman threw up his hands at this and said, this is just now the oppressive state is just feeding on itself. It's similar. What you've just said about the obligation to go to college, it's similar to so many other arguments about what we're forced to do. Similar to the argument that, hey, look, here we bail out large corporations. We spent so much damn money in 20, the government rather, spent so much more money in 2020 that fell into the hands of crooks. And so why don't we bail out students? So once again, the utter corruption of society begins to feed on itself, begins to become a justification for further corruption. And where will it ever stop? We could, of course, make at least certain arguments, even acknowledging this point, that because you're pressured into going to college, we're going to bail you out with at least to the tune of $10,000 to $20,000. Part of it, of course, is that so many students, so many kids were frugal. They didn't want to run up a huge debt, so they stayed home and they commuted to college. They went to cheaper colleges. So many people paid off their debt. So what about them? So there's so many. And of course, the other arguments are an argument you already made in your email, Tom. This is a regressive distribution of income. It's not really a forgiveness, by the way. The federal government is basically saying, by the way, the aggregate numbers are the most important. The aggregate numbers are, it's about $400 billion involved in forgiveness. And that means the federal government is not going to take in $400 billion. Now, of course, if you look at the cumulative deficits that the federal government is supposed to pile up, according to the Congressional Budget Office, it's $15.7 trillion. So $400 billion, I guess, is a spit in the ocean, but it does mean that the government is going to have a $400 billion shortfall. And most likely, given the avalanche of debt, that debt is going to have to be picked up through further monetary creation. It's going to have to be picked up by the Federal Reserve. But so that's my partial answer to the question, but it does segue into Brian Kaplan's argument about what college is really about. We're fostering an institution that really is just a waste of time for the vast majority of kids who don't show up for class, who are totally bored with it. They're doing it only because they want to signal how conformist they are. They want to signal that they're willing to put up with a four-year ordeal in order to get a decent job. So we've got to push back against that. And that gets back to your point in the email you wrote about alternatives to college, and hopefully that's beginning to increase. And it's a real question, by the way, as to whether and how successful the pushback against the signaling of college, how successful it's going to be. What is it you've been pushing, that apprenticeship program? Tom, why don't you talk a little bit more about that, the alternative to college?
Yeah, I had not too long ago, I had Cameron Sorsby back on. He runs the Praxis program. Now, it was founded by a guy named Isaac Morehouse, whom I've known for a long time. Yeah. But it's like it's a college alternative apprenticeship program where you go to a boot camp for about 6 months and you learn a lot of stuff relating to business. Then they put you into a job, you get an internship there, and at the conclusion of that internship, you're guaranteed a position at that place if you would like it. And so what winds up happening is for three of your 4 years that you would have spent in college, instead of racking up debt, you're earning money. And you're gaining on the job experience. So I have people, young people who listen to this show or their parents listen to this show, who are now in their 20s, financially independent, no debt, doing very well, already rising in the ranks because they've had years and years to do it. And also, you know, even if they move to another position, notice how their resume stands out from everybody else's. Everybody else's, they all did the conventional thing, and their resume is full of, I would like to actualize my potential for leadership by blah, 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 blah. These people can actually prove they've done something because they've actually been out of the world doing something. So if you're interested in hearing what it's all about, I have a redirect link, tomwoods.com/praxis. It's just P-R-A-X-I-S, tomwoods.com/praxis. Let me ask you, Gene, though, on the economics of this. What effects will this move have on college tuition and why?
Well, let me answer that at least with one relatively sure response, which is to say, I'll broaden your question and say, what are these sort of unintended consequences, the side effects, you know, looking into the unseen? Well, one of the things is that I advised my son, of course, not that he needed the advice, just this morning, to recognize that if he does end up sending his two boys to college, then recognize you're likely to borrow at least up to $10,000 because you're going to get that forgiven. You know, so there's already a $10,000 discount imposed. But then to get to your specific question, Tom, it's pretty clear this is what? It's a sort of financial treadmill. It's a boomerang effect. The more government pours into the college system, colleges then respond by raising their prices. There's a very good chance that most of this sort of $10,000 forgiveness is going to get wiped away by a gradual hike in what college costs, because the colleges sort of they're just a bottomless pit of how much they can pay their professors, how many swimming pools and luxury dining rooms they can install.
And administrators.
I left that out. Yeah, the absolute explosion in administrators who are going to be talking about the administrators that have to do with making sure that a sufficient share of transgender people are accepted. And of course, that's never good for racial minorities and transgender people who do get accepted to places like Yale and Harvard, because that's another boomerang effect. Everybody knows they got there. It's like the legacy kids. You get there because you're a racial minority. And of course, we always used to sneer a little bit at the legacy kids, the kids whose parents were big donors to the college, and they had to suffer from it. I mean, I knew a guy who was literally Franklin D. Roosevelt III. And he went around with this understandable complex that everything he did, everybody knew it was handed to him. And that was obviously very demoralizing. But in the case of the legacy kids, at least they're not hurt that much because they have money backing them. In the case of the other kids who the administrators are going to accept because of their minority status, they don't have money backing them. But when they submit their resumes, people are going to discount that. That happened to Clarence Thomas. It's going to happen to others. I digress on that. But going back to the economics, as you said, there is a likelihood that colleges will not immediately, but slowly respond by boosting their rates accordingly, knowing that, of course, there's a $10,000 floor now in the tuition. And of course, my son should respond by recognizing that you should borrow, even if you have the money, borrow at least $10,000 worth because it's going to be forgiven. So it could ultimately be self-defeating. Another dimension to it, I should say as well, is that Phil Magnus, for example, whom I think he's probably been on your show. He's done a lot of great things. He was joking about how he's going to need $10,000 forgiveness on the car he's going to have to make payments on. And so we wonder, why doesn't the government sort of target, you know, try to tell, poor people have a lot of payday loans. So if you really want to help the poor, then why not just forgive the payday loans? You know, I mean, obviously, in that particular case, you have to make an actual outlay to the creditors and pay that off, because that's really going to help poor people, because you know, their payday loans, for the most part, are borrowed for decent reasons. But of course, you don't do that because of the sacred status that college has in the imagination. College is our new church. It's our secular church, our secular synagogue. It's a new religion. You can't argue with people that college is a waste of time. They just sort of have this investment in the idea that it's transformative, even though if they look back on their own experience, they don't read any books after they finish college, and they didn't read half the books that were assigned, and they cut half their classes. You know, at Harvard, it was Steven Pinker. Steven Pinker wrote an article about how even he, who's a fascinating, interesting guy, he's used to the fact that half the class cut doesn't show up after the first day of class at Harvard, with Steven Pinker, who's a fascinating polymath. So it's all basically, my message about college is that we've got this bizarre idea that 18 and 19-year-olds, or even in the case of high school, 16 and 17-year-olds really want to spend their time listening to lectures and reading books. Most people, even when they're 50, don't want to do that. But of course, later on in life, they get a little bit more contemplative. But most kids, of course, want to be out in the world, want to be doing what you suggested, Tom, having to do with apprenticing yourself, actually earning money and actually doing something in the world. But the real question will be, and I believe that if you had Brian Kaplan on show, he would love to respond cynically and say that the program you're speaking of will still not quite have the cachet of pointing out, well, our kids, you know, if you graduate from college and you do the whole 4 years, you've proven you're a conformist. You've proven you could put up with something. But and then, of course, countering that, as you suggested, Tom, countering that, how about the kid who's shown that he has initiative, that has actually worked at something? It's going to be war between the one and the other. And I think Brian likes to strike the cynical note and argue that most employers are cynical, and they really value the message, the signaling message you leave with respect to having gone through the four-year ordeal. It will be interesting to see what happens in that regard. And obviously, I'm pulling for the programs that do not put people through college. There's one other point where I have a big, I love Brian Kaplan's book. You had me on the show once just to talk about the book and my perspective on it.
I've also had Brian himself on,
yes,
but then you had your own take, so I brought you on to talk about his book.
No, I've been wanting to tell Brian, by the way, came to New York a couple of weeks ago to do a stand-up act that was only a few blocks away from, and he made a joke about college, about the essay you write about why you want to go to college, and he had this big satire on the foolish and crazy things you write, when he said, look, the really honest response is, I got to go through this goddamn 4 years because I want to get a decent job. You know, that's the only reason why I want to go to your goddamn school. You know, that's why I want to go to Harvard and Yale. I wanted to collar him because I want to tell Brian, since he loves the comic book mode, he did a comic book version. I'm calling it comic books. It's the illustrated book, you know, a version of an argument for open borders and immigration. pro-immigration. And he's done a book, but I want to tell Brian, do a comic book on what you like to call the case against education. And we all think he should have called it the case against schooling. And he acknowledges that. But where I had an issue with Brian is that he didn't make a couple of points that he didn't make, but one of them he did not make is that college is a redistribution of income to the better off from the worse off.
Yeah.
I think it's like he almost had an ego thing with Milton Friedman, because Milton Friedman made that point himself in his book, Free to Choose. And Brian said, oh, the situation is murkier now. And when I met with him briefly, he was about to do a debate at the SOFORM, Forum, so he was distracted. I was distracted. I wanted to make the rock bottom point is that so many people do not go to college. The key people who do not go to college are obviously among the poorer people, the lower half of the population, the people who don't finish college or go to junior, lower half of the population, and yet they pay taxes that contribute mightily to the dominant state institutions that give out these degrees. So it's clear that the people who don't go, and you made that point in your own email, Tom, as well, the people who don't go to college are now, I'm not arguing they pay huge amounts in taxes, but they do pay taxes. Certainly they pay state taxes to finance state-run colleges, and they don't benefit from it. You made the larger point that obviously this $400 billion in some way or another has got to be made up in some way. Some of it might be made up in taxes. Certainly it's going to be made up with inflation. And that burden is in part going to be borne by people who do not benefit at all from college. Therefore, it is a redistribution of income. As a matter of fact, let me get on my second hobby horse about where Brian missed, where he was getting a lot of pushback from the spiritualists about college. And the spiritualists were saying, Brian, you've tried to chase down the benefits from college as an economist. You don't grant all the spiritual benefits that cannot be measured. You know, they're ineffable. You know,
the fact they have to resort to this, Gene, means it's not very strong, the case.
Okay, Tom. But yeah, all right. So you're giving up. And I'm going to, okay. Yes, indeed. It does indeed prove it's not very strong when you fall back on the spiritual benefits of college. But of course, they all believe in it. I told Brian, and he wrote me a good point, but he didn't quite follow through when he was getting this pushback. I mean, how many kids have I met, or people I've met, who are given the ordeal of college, and then they start hating books? You know, maybe it's not permanent damage, but the very vague notion of the spiritual benefits, even if we grant some scintilla of plausibility to that, how about the kids who found it an unpleasant ordeal and who rebel against it, who don't pick up a book? I mean, look, I know somebody, she was an English major, and for years, she just didn't want to pick up another novel. You get harangued, you have a bad taste in your mouth. So you see that point. In other words, how about the ways in which all this forced stuff kills curiosity? I believe that's, of course, also difficult to measure, but there's certainly many anecdotes that I can cite about it. And you know, I love the fact that there's I forget who wrote this series of books about the curriculum, and he recommended the novels of Willa Cather. You know, Willa Cather's novels are assigned, because actually, you know, I read them and I liked them in high school, but Willa Cather wrote what I regard as a letter, in her collected letters, that I'd like to promote a little bit more, where she pled with this superintendent of schools who asked her, which of her novels would you like us to assign in high school? And she said, look, my first plea is, please don't assign them. I don't want to make my novels part of the grind. She said, I'd like to think that kids would read my novels because they just want to come to them, you know, without being coerced into reading them. So she was afraid, you're forced into reading me, and then maybe a few years later, you know, when you weren't ready for the experience, you're not going to read her. So that's my point that Brian should make. But more importantly, of course, he should try to make the point against the progressives about the obvious fact that this is a subsidy. And of course, why would I want Brian? I had Brian debate Ed Glaser. And Ed Glaser of Harvard is a very good guy in many things. And all Brian was arguing for, the debate resolution, which he won hands down, and he was very excited that he did, against the great Ed Glaser, had to do with pulling the government out of any subsidies for universities, because really that's what created the disease. Circa 1940, 1950, 5% of people had a college degree, and now it's one-third have a college degree. And what's the difference between then and now? Well, you know, if you want to go to college, there were private colleges, that's fine. That was in 1930, 1940, people went to college. But then the government came in, stepped in, and expanded that enormously. And so now one-third go to college. Now, that's what created the critical mass That's the reason why it's difficult to get a job if you have a high school degree. It would have been much easier to get a job if you had a high school degree, a good job, if you had a high school degree in 1940 than it is today, because the government has created that critical mass. Employers who barely have to pay for it can use a college diploma as a signal that this kid is a team player, this kid is probably going to be a conformist employee, and went through the ordeal. You know, I love Brian's research about the sheepskin effect. Data that exists on the difference between the employment prospects of kids who finish 3 years of college versus kids who go the distance and finish four. Now, you'd expect that the kids who finish 3 years should be doing 75% as well as the kids who finish 4 years of college, you know, because, you know, that's only logical, right? But it turns out there's a huge disparity. And as Brian said, does that mean the final year of college really does it for you? Well, most kids goof off in the final year, the senior slump, you know. So obviously, it's really that you went the distance. The sheepskin effect is the powerful effect. And again, it's government creation of all these colleges and universities that's created the critical mass of one-third of people who have college degrees, making it more and more difficult for kids who just do their time through high school to get decent jobs as well. But getting back to the whole theme, Tom, about doing something in the world, your promotion of all of these alternatives, and that particular alternative is, of course, quite useful. I hope more and more kids go in for it. Anything else we have to say about this, Tom, about the forgiveness?
Before I go on, let me say a quick thing that will help a lot of you, and you know who you are. If you are in business and you're getting buried by your competition online, then build your brand, your reputation, and your lead flow with digital marketing by Persist SEO, our great sponsor. If you're a small local business, you're trying to compete against large companies in the service industry, increase your visibility with Persist SEO. Or if you have low or no leads coming in on a consistent basis, well, website search engine and conversion optimization can help move the needle to a more prosperous business model for you. If you're tired of cold calling, use your website as a lead generation engine. If you're not showing up for your services on the search engines, then get found with Persist SEO's expert search engine optimization. All you have to do is call 770-580-3736 or visit them at ineedseo.help. for a free website audit and consultation. That's 770-580-3736 or ineedseo.help. Well, first of all, I'll link to that, the Praxis stuff on the show notes page, also tomwoods.com/2191. Just a couple things I saw on social media that I thought summed it up very well and that amplify some of the things you're saying. Somebody was saying, I just got my car from the auto mechanic I use, and he's a great guy, and he, you know, he doesn't overcharge you or fix problems that aren't there. Just great guy, works very hard. And now today, he, to some degree, is on the hook for financial decisions made by somebody who majored in women's studies, who probably sneers at him for not having a degree. Absolutely, number one. Then another person said, look, I did everything right in the sense that I went to college as I was expected to, but I was also responsible. Because I was in college or because I had these expenses, this meant that I had to delay or just avoid altogether a down payment on a home, vacations I might have taken, experiences I might have had. And now I'm finding out, well, I shouldn't have bothered. I should have gone ahead and done these things. The people who did go ahead and do these things are going to be made whole. But I, the sucker that I was who thought I was being responsible, I just get permanently screwed out of them.
Yes. Well, no, I love that, Tom. And of course, I'm always looking for, you know, a silver lining, as you are, to all of these episodes, all of this crazy farcical stuff of, you know, like acting like Eva Perón and with giveaways to the masses, the bread and circuses, giveaways to people because college is indeed a circus. And indeed, on those two levels, I hope it's fanning the flames of resentment on the part of, again, people who paid their dues, who paid off their debt and who made the sacrifices. But then more especially, that's why I wanted to push Brian and others to make the point that public universities are indeed a redistribution from the rich to the poor. And indeed, to put a fine anecdotal point on it, as you have, you know, you're paying for other people to look down on you because you didn't finish, you didn't go to college, and they did. And so, of course, actually, because that's the other thing that college is selling, a reasonable amount of class snobbery, that you attended college and others did not. So I hope that, you know, the populist resentment reaches a high boil with this incident, and we begin to call college for what it is, really just, for the vast majority of kids, a waste of time. And again, perhaps I told my own story. I taught in college for 3 years. My second year, I decided to rebel against inflicting myself on my students. And I gave an announcement that you would get a guaranteed C just for signing up for the course. When I taught a little bit later at City University, it was a guaranteed pass. So just for signing up for the course. Now, the students didn't rat me out, which is interesting. I became, as you might imagine, a very popular professor as a result. So I had about maybe, it was about 10% of the kids, 90% of the kids never showed up from then on. And 10% of the kids did. Now, of course, it meant I did have to make my peace with the system. In order to get an honors grade or an A or a B, you had to show up. I didn't think I should give out, you know, high grades. So there, too, it was a bit corrupt. But I would say that my numbers were about correct. I'd say about 10% of kids who are 18 or 19 really are suited for college. If you never had government getting involved, college would have been pretty cheap. Poor kids. Well, Kathy was poor. She went to college. You know, it's fine for a lot of kids. 5% of the population had college degrees, something like that. It's definitely an experience that a small minority of kids do benefit from. The vast majority of them do not. And that's the reason why it's rotten, basically rotten to the core. But again, going back to your anecdotes, I hope that resentment rises to a boil about what has been done by the Biden administration in this regard.
All right, we'll wrap it up there. Gene, I'm going to be in New York City September 15th through the 18th. Uh-huh. So I hope we can set up time for lunch.
Sure, yes.
You know, you mentioned supporting the Soho Forum. Yeah. I will be bringing you a check for the Soho Forum.
Oh, my gosh.
And I believe it will be of an amount sufficient to entitle me to a dinner with Gene Epstein.
Okay. Yes. That's right. Tom, yeah, you're one of those chumps who took the dinner with Gene Epstein. Okay. Well, I love you for that, Tom. I honor you for that. I look forward to that. And I look forward to doing another interview with you shortly on some other topic.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. We'll have you back on soon. Yeah. So when you said that, it made me think of a world in which I actually earned my dinner with Gene Epstein. And then 2 weeks later, Joe Biden says, everybody gets a dinner with Gene Epstein. Oh, you know?
I would look favorably on the Biden White House about that. I think it would be a nice contribution. It's probably not going to happen, though. Anyway, okay.
Probably not, but it would do the world a lot of good. All right. Thanks so much, Gene. We'll talk again soon.
Sure. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this week. We're going to get Gene back next week because we actually were planning to talk about something else. And then all of a sudden, this whole matter of student loans came up and everybody was talking about it. So I thought, let's hit this issue while it's on everybody's minds, and then we'll get back to what we want to talk about next week. So expect another Gene Epstein episode next week. I got a bunch of great ones lined up. I'm heading to Scotland next week. I've got all the episodes already lined up to be released to you one day at a time. I'd planned to do, or at least in my mind, I had planned to do an event, a meetup of some kind with listeners over in Scotland, but I just have so much planned, I don't think I can fit it in. But other travel destinations coming up, I'll see what I can do about doing something at least, you know, on a small scale to say some hellos to everybody. So if you like and appreciate the Tom Woods Show, supportinglisteners.com is where to go. You get many, many goodies as my way of saying a profound thank you for making this show possible. See you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.